So look at this story in Peoria. It says here, Illinois could see a change in the way citizens vote, perhaps by the 2028 presidential election. Voters will be able to weigh in on ranked choice voting with an advisory question on the fall ballot, which means the result will not be binding. A 20-member state task force is studying the issue by reviewing different voting systems and processes to see if ranked choice voting should be implemented in Illinois. Here's how it works. Voters rank candidates in order of preference. If a candidate receives a majority of the first place votes, they're declared the winner. 50% plus one, as they say. But if no one gets a majority, the candidate that comes in last place is eliminated, and all the votes favoring that candidate are reallocated to the voter's second-ranked choice. Gene Massey joins us now on WGN. Hi, Gene. How are you?
Hi, John. Great to be back on the air with you.
You and I have talked for years about this, first in Minnesota, where you are, but it's a national trend. Give us an idea of how broad the scope is of ranked choice voting in the U.S.
Yeah, well, for sure, it's one of the fastest growing reforms across the country to fix a lot of what is broken in our politics right now. So it is now used in 60-plus jurisdictions around the country, five here in Minnesota, as you know, one in Illinois, Evanston, several under consideration, as you mentioned, and two states that have already adopted it, Maine and Alaska, with pretty instantaneous success in demonstrating the power and value of ranked choice voting. And now this year, there are four states with ballot measures to adopt ranked choice voting. They might surprise you which ones they are. They include Idaho, Nevada, Colorado, and Oregon. The Washington, D.C. has a ballot measure to adopt ranked choice voting, and Missouri has a ballot measure to ban ranked choice voting, unfortunately.
To ban ranked choice voting, wow.
10 GOP-controlled states have already banned ranked choice voting. Here in Minnesota, similarly aligned groups, which is largely led by a playbook created by the Heritage Foundation, I want to mention, are trying to repeal it here in Minnesota. We had an attempt last year in Minnetonka. It failed 59-41. They're trying again this year in Bloomington. We'll make sure they fail here in Bloomington this year, too, but it's just ridiculous that they want to take a revote on a very popular measure.
Why do these states or these people want to not allow ranked choice voting?
For whatever reason, they believe that it's not clear, honestly.
Well, I can guess, but pardon me, Gene, I'll guess. That is, if you have several candidates, say you have 10 candidates and the person with the most votes gets 39%, then that person got the most votes and they should win. Most votes wins. But obviously the person with 39% of the vote is not the choice of 61% of the electorate. But that's the system we have in this country. We've had it forever. So there's a comfort with that, even though we see it for its flaws. Ranked choice voting seems contrived, like you rank them and then we do that process I just described. I don't know. Maybe it is true that somehow the system we have now favors conservative candidates, but maybe that's also in play.
Well, I think it really depends on how you define that political spectrum. What we know is that people of all political stripes, be them Republican, Independents, Democrats, love ranked choice voting and vote yes when they have an opportunity. I would argue that there are some extreme factions within the Republican Party who are fighting this. You see that in Alaska right now. There's a repeal effort there. That's the group behind the repeal efforts here. And so one thing that ranked choice voting successfully does accomplish is to unite rather than divide and bring together a broader coalition of people. So if you're one extreme branch of a political party, that kind of brand doesn't prevail well under ranked choice voting.
And why is that?
Well, because your win number under ranked choice voting is 50% plus one. You enter into a race, you know you have your base. It could be 35-40%. But your goal now is to win a runoff and secure 50% plus one. So what you want to do is reach out and build a coalition to accomplish that big tent. And if you don't want to do that, or if you worry about what that would look like, then that causes you concern. So the value of ranked choice voting is to make sure that whoever prevails at the end of any election is reflective and accountable to a majority of the citizens.
Is most palatable to most people, yeah.
Well, then what would
happen in a case of, say you have Kamala Harris and Donald Trump and Jill Stein on the ballot, or RFK Jr., Cornel West, somebody who might pull a percent or even less. What impact would that have in this election, and how would that play out if there were ranked choice voting?
Well, I think we're in a very similar situation in 2024 as we were in 2016 and before that in 2000. That very small margin of a split by third-party candidates can be significant in very tight races. And now we have about seven swing states where we've got a strong third-party presence. And it's not just one. It's not just still Jill Stein this year. You've got Libertarian candidate Chase Oliver. You've got Cornel West. You have JFK still on the ballot, even though he's not running. And people who are frustrated with the two parties, they will vote third parties, and we've seen the impact of that. So I'll just kind of paint that picture. In 2016, in at least three states, third-party candidates, principally Jill Stein, as you mentioned, pulled enough votes away from Hillary to swing the Electoral College votes to Donald Trump in those three swing states. So while she won the popular vote, she did not win the Electoral College vote. Fast forward to 2020, that the impact of third-party candidates was much, much smaller, and indeed that allowed for a bigger margin of win for President Biden, both in the popular vote, and he won the Electoral College vote. This year seems like it's heading towards a 2016 once again, with very tight margins, third-party candidates polling anywhere from 1% to 5% in some of these swing states. And in places like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, there are six third-party candidates on the ballot. That's significant. So what we are all kind of worried about is that fact that you've got this disjoint again between a potential popular winner of a popular vote but not winning the Electoral College vote, and not having the will of the majority prevail.
So if you wanted to vote for Jill Stein, but you say, I can't because I want to throw my vote to one of the other two major candidates who will win, and it's not going to be Jill Stein, you know, what's a voter to do? If you vote for Jill Stein, that may be a vote away from the candidate who you would at least best tolerate, who is in fact going to win. But if you had ranked choice voting, you could vote for Jill Stein, say. Then when she's eliminated, your second choice or your third choice would eventually be counted. And I think it enfranchises those candidates and the people that want to vote for them. Now you can vote for a Green Party candidate without feeling like you're wasting your vote.
Precisely. And after all this time and suffering the consequences of not having ranked choice voting and allowing that voice for voters and allowing voters to not worry about splitting their vote or voting for the candidate they like the least, knowing that will harm their ultimate outcome, is really frustrating. The good news is that this reform really is on a growth path, so that we will have sufficient states hopefully using ranked choice voting soon, including at the presidential level, where we can put a big dent in this problem. We should have ranked choice voting for presidential elections up and down the ballot, but we see almost every cycle the huge consequence of third-party candidates playing a spoiler role rather than a choice role.
Yeah. All right, Gene, we're done today. We'll talk again. But just one last quick question to be clear. So in some states where there are as many as seven candidates on the ballot for president, in some states it's three, maybe some states it's two. But if I had seven, I would rank all seven then, right? One through seven, rank them in my order of choice?
You certainly could, although most voters don't have a preference slate of seven. They may choose their first and then maybe one or two backups, especially in these partisan races.
Okay. I'll send them to your website. Is that probably as instructive as anything? FairVoteMN, as in Minnesota, that's where you are, fairvotemn.org. Sound good, Jean?
Sounds great. Thanks, John. I appreciate the chance.
Yeah, we always like talking to Jean Massey. Maybe you agree, maybe you disagree, but at least that's the lay of the land. She's the executive director of Fair Vote up there.